Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We have been infiltrated by people from Milwaukee who are kind of from Chicago. I'll explain in a second. Tony, let's go. I felt so bad the last time that Rami came down from Milwaukee because I promised him an hour and I forgot how I got truncated that night, but I think we ended up doing 30 minutes instead of an hour. And you must have felt like I was like a terrible dude, like when you're doing shows at comedy venues and they're like, oh man, you got 10 minutes, and they flash the light at you after five.
After five, yeah. Because some dude just showed up who's been on Comedy Central and he's gotta get some stage time, right? So now they gotta cut into my stage time. Instead this time it was Dave Leto, the DePaul head coach.
That's what it was.
Hey man, if I get bumped by Dave Leto, I get bumped by Dave Leto. That's just part of the business, right?
Rami's one of my brothers from Milwaukee. He is it's fair to say he is a child of the Me and Z movement.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I've heard rumblings that Dan Zampillo might be in town next week.
Really?
And perhaps
a reunion?
Perhaps there might be a podcast of some sort.
Uh-oh. Lawrence, I need a heads up if that happens, man.
There might be a Me and Z podcast.
I'm not even kidding.
That was
one of my favorite shows that was ever on the Score. And I know that they put, you know, they don't put the primetime guys on the weekend. That's sort of when you're working your way up the ladder. But that was one of the better shows that I've ever enjoyed on the Score.
We had a good time, and now he's like a big shot who runs the ESPN Los Angeles.
Oh,
now
okay.
So there's a big like thing that's supposed to be happening. And I heard that he's going to be in town, and we're doing something here with Jason Barrett.
Okay,
so I might have to drag Zampillo into his studio and see if he can still talk.
Oh, I think he could pull it off.
He's management now.
Oh, okay. He's put that suit on.
Yeah.
He made some real money.
He's making that real. He has a real future in this business.
Right, yeah.
And the rest of us are just out there trying to scratch together nickels and dimes.
Yep.
Rami is the host, or one of the hosts, of The Big Show. You check out his work. If you're in the Milwaukee area, 105.7, 1250 AM, 2 to 6, you're on break. People are worried that, like, you not being on air, now you pop up on air in Chicago means that you've been fired. You have not been fired.
No. And okay, that, you know this, Lawrence. Every time you take, like, more than a day off in the radio business, there's Twitter rumors flying that you've either been fired or suspended or you got in a fight with a co-host. So I just put out a tweet today to end all that noise. I was like, not fired, not suspended, just chilling. That's all I'm doing.
That's all you're doing.
Yes, sir.
But you wanted to come home and hang out?
Absolutely.
So what are you doing? Like, what does one do? How much time are you spending in Chicago? And how much is you just wanted to be at your house in Milwaukee, just like not worrying about doing shows?
It's mostly just wanting to sit around my house in Milwaukee, Lawrence. This is the one night that I'll be spending up here in Chicago. I'm going to go get some dinner, some drinks with my brother and my girlfriend who are here with me right now and a couple of friends. And then it'll be back to Milwaukee to just watch all the Netflix. Just everything on Netflix will be consumed over the next 5 days or so.
All right, let's get it. Get
yes,
after.
Sir.
What are you watching on Netflix?
Well, I got Jessica Jones in my queue because I do all the Marvel stuff on Netflix, Lawrence. There have been like mixed reviews about this, and it seems like you either love it or you hate it. The Punisher on Netflix, man. Oh,
I haven't watched The Punisher yet.
Oh, man.
I really enjoyed The Defender, but I did not enjoy Iron Fist, and I did not enjoy Iron Fist in The Defenders.
Yeah, I think we're in the same boat there.
But I haven't checked out Punisher. I enjoy Jessica Jones.
Lawrence, I think, now this is a big proclamation that I'm making here when I say what I'm about to say.
Okay.
In my opinion, The Punisher, the Netflix series, is the best thing to come out of the Marvel Universe, all the movies and everything included.
Really?
Yes, sir. because it's not just a comic book movie, man. It appeals to the feels. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It tugs at the heartstrings a little bit because the backstory of the Punisher is he's a veteran of war. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And it shows some of his struggles and some of his comrades' struggles of coming back stateside and trying to live civilian life and get out of that soldier mentality. You know what I mean? And some of the, now obviously it's exaggerated a little bit because he's a superhero and everything that goes with that, but it really, it shows a little bit of that struggle. And you start, you know, it's not just an action show where it's exciting and there are shots fired and bones breaking, but it really sort of, it makes you think, it makes you feel a little bit. And I think that's, I love the Marvel Universe. I love all the movies and everything, but I think that's something that they don't always have. The Punisher really hits you from a lot of different angles.
That's kind of how I felt about Black Panther. Mm-hmm. I thought that it really, it was such a cultural event. Like everyone, like I was in tears. The first challenge sequence where you saw like all these beautiful colors mm-hmm. that were going on.
I haven't seen Black Panther yet. That's part of the vacation, Lawrence. That's part of the vacation. It's on the docket.
All right, then I'll spoiler alert.
Tuesday $5 matinee, my friend.
Well, hey, you know what? it is all about getting the bargain.
Yes,
sir.
If
you can get the bargain. I'm a big fan of that. I'm looking forward to the new season, Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke Cage coming back, because I think that from what I've seen, the stuff that they're going to do with Misty Knight is really, really interesting. I've seen some of the early clips. What's wrong, Tony?
You can keep all of that.
Really?
All of that, Luke Cage. Keep all of it.
Okay.
You're not with Luke Cage?
No.
Really?
Rami, you got to understand. God, no. You got to understand this about Tony.
Okay.
He has very unpopular opinions.
He's that guy.
I mean,
okay.
He's not trying to be.
Right.
Like, it's not a bit.
Right.
But he hates Michael B. Jordan.
What?
Hold on. It gets worse. He hates Michael B. Jordan. He's never seen The Wire. He's never seen Friday Night Lights. Yeah.
How can you even have an educated opinion on the man without seeing some of his most viewed work?
This is what we have had the conversation with Tony back and forth.
Like, I'm not even a big fan of either of those two movies that you just named, but I've seen them.
He hasn't seen Fruitvale Station.
Oh, man. Tony.
So basically, he's basing his hate. And tell me if I'm wrong here, Tony. You didn't like his acting on NBA 2K17.
Correct.
That's what soured him on Michael B. Jordan, NBA 2K?
I think that there's also a little bit of haterade going on.
Okay.
Just a skosh of
haterade. He's a good-looking dude, the six-pack.
Tony's also a good-looking dude.
He's a good-looking dude, yeah, absolutely.
But Michael
B. Jordan is like...
Aren't you guys like around the same age, too? He's a little bit older than you, Tony, but you're
around... Yeah, he's got like 6 or 7 years on me.
Is he in his 30s?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, he's not that close to you. Tony's like 20 years old.
Oh,
like,
really? Okay.
He's 25. But
all right.
He's a young man, but hates Michael B.
Really?
Jordan.
Now, I haven't seen Creed yet. I hear good things about Creed.
Don't get him. Go ahead.
Athletic Michael B. Jordan.
His point is that Michael B. Jordan is Michael B. Jordan in every
role. In every movie he does?
That he kind of like Ryan Reynolds.
I can see that.
Ryan Reynolds is Ryan Reynolds. Now he's just Ryan Reynolds. Like, Deadpool is perfect for him.
But Joe Pesci is Joe Pesci in every movie he does, and it works.
I don't disagree.
Okay.
But that's what Tony is on.
All right.
For sure. That's the way that he gets down. So again, thanks for coming down.
No, my pleasure, man.
Able to kind of combo this, hang out with the fam
a little bit.
Come back to Chicago and do some stuff. I got some baseball stuff for you.
All right.
As you sit there with your Cubs cap on.
Yeah, you know, I was driving in and I heard you saying coming up next, one of the smartest guys in the world when it comes to talking baseball. I was like, man, Lawrence is hyping me up. And then it was your guy, Dino.
No, Eno.
Oh, Eno. I'm sorry. Eno.
Eno. Saris.
Okay. All right.
Eno is the man.
No, he was really good.
But you're my Milwaukee Connect. So did the Brewers do enough?
It looked like they did enough.
It really did.
And then the Cubs went and got you Darvish, and then all of a sudden it didn't look like enough anymore. And Brewers fans definitely reflected that. Like the excitement, the hype, everything that came with the Kane and Yelich acquisitions. I mean, Brewers fans were on cloud nine, and they made those acquisitions just 2 days before their on deck event, which is the equivalent of the Cubs convention. You know what I mean? They managed to fly those guys in, get them in there, tickets. I mean, you couldn't get a ticket for the on deck event.
Really?
Because they flew off the racks as soon as they made those acquisitions. Next thing you know, the event was sold out. So Brewers fans were real hyped about those acquisitions and started having, you know, dreams, thoughts dancing in their head of knocking off the Cubs in the NL Central this year. And then I think it was 5 days later, the Cubs go out and get Yu Darvish, and all the excitement, at least coming through our phone lines and through Twitter and everything else, it seemed to die down a little bit. They still have hopes of getting in the playoffs, maybe nabbing one of those two wild card spots. But I think most realistic Brewers fans think it's an uphill battle, to say the least, to knock off the Cubs.
I felt as if they needed to get Arrieta or Darvish.
Yeah.
What have the folks at the Brewers said about whether or not they even really pursued either one of them?
I talked with David Stearns, the Brewers general manager, when we were down at spring training a few weeks ago, and he said that he, more than almost ever since his time that he's been in baseball, at least when it comes to rumors associated with his club, he's never seen, now GM is almost always going to say this, Lawrence, you know that. He said he's never seen so many rumors where he didn't know where they were coming from. And that goes all the way back to their interest in Jose Quintana last year before the Cubs nabbed him. Then there was reports that they were interested in Darvish and the Cubs get him. And then there were reports that they were interested in Jake Arrieta and he goes to the Phillies long before Arrieta and Lynn went off the market. As soon as I walked out of David Stern's office during that interview at Maryvale Baseball Park a few weeks ago, I walked out of there thinking they're done. They're not going to go out and get anybody else. This is who they're going to go to battle with come opening day, and it sure looks that way now because the free agent market has been dried up.
Yeah, and I thought that once they made those moves, like Yelich makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big Lokane guy.
Yep.
I love him as a player. And I'm like, they need more pitching.
Yep.
They need more starting pitching. Because to me, look, the Cubs are loaded. You look around the diamond, they got guys, they got MVP candidates all over the place. And now you add Yu Darvish to a rotation that was already pretty good. When you're able to take Tyler Chatwood, whose numbers away from Coors are a lot
really
better
good. Yep.
than they were at Coors, he's your five. You could realistically run a rotation out there where Kyle Hendricks is your four or your two. You know, like
you could throw Montgomery in there and have a six-man rotation.
You absolutely could.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to compete with that level of pitching, I don't know if the Brewers are going to be able to hit their way to the playoffs. Now, I said this about them last year. I didn't think that they were going to be able to hit their way to it, and for the most part, they came real close.
Yep.
And they added some better bats to their lineup. What were they doing with Ryan Braun?
He is they're trying him out a little bit at first base because they got Yelich, they got Kane, they got Domingo Santana.
Yeah, they don't
who had his big breakout year last year. So they want to work it out so that, especially when they face lefties, they can get Yelich, Kane, Santana, and Braun all in the lineup on the same day, and that would require Braun to go over to first base. He's having difficulty with it though, and he's been open about that during the time that he's been experimenting over at first base this spring.
What's bothering him?
It's the footwork, you know what I mean? A lot of the stuff that is sort of just sort of ingrained in a first baseman from playing it over a long course of time, knowing where to put your foot on a bag, knowing how deep you have to go into the hole with whatever second baseman is that you're playing or when you should run over to first and play the bag. It's a lot of the stuff that's just instinctual and ingrained in longtime first baseman that I don't think a lot of people think about until they actually get over there, and you have to think about it's almost like playing offensive line, Lawrence. You don't see a lot of the intricacies that go with it, but those guys are thinking, all right, got to step here, make contact here. And I think a lot of the same stuff goes into playing first base, and you want to get to the point where you're not thinking about it, and you're just doing it, and I think he's still thinking about it.
Well, that's something that we should be watching for throughout
Absolutely.
The season.
Yep.
As it goes on, if he ever really gets comfortable.
And the question is, how much defense are you willing to sacrifice over at first base to have those four bats in the lineup on the same day consistently when you're facing lefties?
Isn't it amazing how we so overlook first base defense?
Absolutely.
That we act as if, oh, well, obviously the guy that's playing first base is a bum.
Right.
You know, he can't play anywhere else. That's why he's playing first base. And then when you see guys that do it really well, like Anthony Rizzo is a really good first baseman defensively, and you go, that saves you runs.
Yep.
The fact that Rizzo now is like, I know John Lester can't throw over to first, so just throw the ball into the ground.
Throw your glove and I'll catch it.
I'll catch it.
Yep.
Whatever you got to do to get, if you want to one hop it, two hop it over here, fine. Just don't throw it over my head and I'll figure out a way to catch the ball.
Remember, Derek Lee used to save almost an error a game, it seemed, man, when I was watching the Cubs growing up. You
great
know what I mean?
Stretch. He had a great stretch.
And he was also like 17
six,
feet tall.
Yeah.
But a good first baseman makes your whole infield better. You know what I mean? That's the thing about a good first baseman. Shortstop, you're a great shortstop. Second baseman, you're a great second baseman. Great first baseman, it makes the whole infield better when you can save your team an error every game or every other game.
So how would you describe how Brewers fans feel about the upcoming season?
Cautiously optimistic. Like I said before, I think that they have thoughts that they could nab one of those two playoff spots, one of those two wild card spots, I should say. And I think that's a realistic expectation. But I think most Brewers fans know that it's going to take them to hit on all cylinders for a good majority of the season for them to have a shot to knock off the Cubs. Or it's going to take the Cubs playing below their level for a good part of the season like we saw last year. If one of those two things happen, or if the two of them happen in conjunction, I think Brewers fans think they have a chance to make some noise in the division. But I think most realistic Brewers fans are looking at making a run at a wild card.
This segment is being brought to you by Liberty Mutual Insurance. You have enough things to worry about every day. Insurance shouldn't be one of them. You can leave worry behind when Liberty stands with you. Liberty Mutual Insurance. Rami does the big show up in Milwaukee, 105.7 in Milwaukee. The last time we were here together, we talked about the rivalry. And we can put that in quotations, the rivalry between the Brewers and the Cubs. I'm as someone who's not involved in it, as someone that's kind of looking from the outside as a White Sox fan, I kind of dig it. I really like that there is some animus. And the folks at the Cubs are kind of like, you know, it's not that big a deal, which is funny to me because a couple years ago, it was the Pirates and the Cardinals dealing with the surging Cubs.
Right.
And I just kind of like that there's some heat between the two organizations. That, to me, is one of the most thing, one of the things that I'm anticipating most about the upcoming season.
You know what it reminds me of, Lawrence? And it's funny because my older brother is sitting here to my left. Huge fan of you, huge fan of the station. So I brought him with to see what you guys do here. It's like a big brother, little brother dynamic. It's like the Brewers and the Cubs are sitting in the back seat of mom's car, and the Brewers have their finger right in the Cubs' face, and they're going, "I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you." You know what I mean? That's what it reminds me of. And the Cubs are trying to keep their patience. They're trying to keep their cool. They're trying not to stoop to the Brewers' level when it comes to some of the social media pokes and prods that have gone on and going back to last year when there was a questionable rain out here at Wrigley Field. Every chance the Brewers get. And actually, to be fair, a lot of this started when the Cubs were questioning Eric Thames and how legit his accomplishments were in the first month of the season last year. So to be fair, that's where it started.
So you have that, you have the rainout, you have the game time change that and ended up happening between the two.
And then leading up to this season, the Brewers pull this thing where, and I got in under the line, where they were selling tickets for one day to Wisconsin residents only to the 10 games that the Brewers and the Cubs we'll have at Miller Park. What they didn't count on is a lot of Cubs fans like
living
myself
Milwaukee.
Living behind enemy lines who went and nabbed up those tickets.
I likened it to what the Nashville Predators kept trying to do with the Blackhawks.
Yep.
Where it's like, you can't come down to Smashville. Okay. They'll buy them retail on the secondary market. Or there are plenty of Blackhawks fans over the last few years that are born everywhere.
Right.
And they were down there in Nashville and they were able to go. And to me, I go back to, it was the day that the Brewers tweeted out they were playing the Cubs, and they were like, 2 hours before the game, they were like, you know, there's still tickets available. And Cubs fans were like, oh, really?
Okay. I'm right here in Waukegan.
I can make that drive and I can get there and I can get to the ballpark. It adds a little juice to it.
There are some Brewers fans who have just given up on trying to own Miller Park when the Cubs come to town. They see Cubs fans as obnoxious. They see some of the antics that go on. I would say it takes two to tango. Like, if there are any fights happening in the Miller Park stands during a Cubs-Brewers game, it took two to tango, all right? The Cubs fan didn't just walk up to you and punch you in the face. That's what I tell them all the time. Like, you wanted a fight. You went in there wanting a fight. But a lot of Brewers fans, they see some of the antics. They don't like us coming up there to their territory. So they're like, you know what? We got 72 other games that we can come and catch our team. We don't need to come and get annoyed by Cubs fans when they come to town.
Do you get called out for this in Milwaukee?
From time to time. I think, I've been the host on the show for going on 7 years now. I was a producer before that. I've been with the station for like 13, 14 years. So I think I've earned some credibility from people, and they see that I unless it comes to trash talking. I mean, trash talking is trash talking, Lawrence, and I'm going to talk some trash.
You're a man that is very good with a microphone in
yes,
his hand.
Yes, but when it comes to, you know, giving you some, analyzing your team and breaking it down, I can do it down the middle, and I think most people who have listened to the station for a long time, they get that by now.
All right, hang tight, because I want to talk to you about another rivalry. Actually, it's not really a rivalry. It's more hammer and nail, with the Chicago team being the nail.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, we'll talk with Rami about that coming up next here on The Score. But don't worry, Rami.
Yes, sir.
I am going to come and hang out in Milwaukee. I'll find a
with
Cubs,
the big show.
Yeah, I'll find a Cubs-Brewers game.
All right.
I'll come do your show, then do my show from Miller Park.
There you go. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Absolutely.
Then sit back, watch a game. And
I was inviting you to come April 6th because, like we were saying before the break, I got in on the one-day-only Wisconsin Residents Brewers ticket sale. I got some tickets for April 6th, and I got an extra one in case Lawrence Holmes came, but those things are hot on the secondary market, Lawrence, so you probably just made me some money by turning down the invite. So.
I appreciate the offer, and
absolutely.
I promise you I will be up in Milwaukee at some point.
Right.
You've been nice enough to drive down here twice to come and hang out on my show, and I do, it is appreciated.
No, it's my pleasure, man. Every time, my pleasure.
Let's talk Bears-Packers.
All right.
So, why was y'all trying to get Kyle Fuller?
You know, because they're desperate for a cornerback right now, Lawrence. They went out and they got Tremont Williams, who I think is 52 years old at this point, today on the free agent market. He had a decent year last year, to be fair. But I think now they're just trying to fill up the secondary with bodies, with veteran bodies who can show the draft picks that they're about to make and the guy that they drafted last year in Kevin King where they're supposed to be and when they're supposed to be there. They're going to have to use at least two of their higher draft picks on cornerbacks this year and hope that they hit on at least one of them if they're going to fix what was wrong with that team last year. And it's what's wrong with that team every year, and it's the defense.
When we were talking about the story Friday night, there was a contingent of Bears fans that were like, are the Packers just needling the Bears here? Are they trying to force the Bears to spend money?
Just to drive the price up.
And honestly, I'm not sure why Ryan Pace didn't wait.
Yeah,
I was
listening to you on the way home that day, and that was a great point. You wait 5 days, and they have that money tied up in Kyle Fuller. It's
yes.
spoken for. They can't spend it on anybody else. I don't know why Ryan Pace didn't wait. That was a great point.
I'm not sure about that at all. It's a very, very strange thing. That being said, Jordy Nelson is no longer a Packer?
Yeah, man.
How's that going over in Milwaukee?
It didn't go over great. And the news of Jimmy Graham signing and Jordy Nelson signing were about 7 minutes apart.
Oh, man.
So Packers fans had that joy, that elation of, you know, because for about a dozen years now, Packers fans have been complaining about their GM, Ted Thompson, and his non-involvement in free agency.
He's all about the draft.
Yes.
We build through the draft here in Green Bay.
So they got this new GM, Brian Gutekunst. They brought him from within. He was a Ted Thompson disciple. But at his opening press conference, he said they will be more aggressive in the offseason and especially in free agency. So they see the Jimmy Graham signing. They're like, all right, new era. A new day has dawned in Green Bay and in the state of Wisconsin. And they were so happy that 7 minutes later, everybody's favorite receiver, Jordy Nelson, and Aaron Rodgers' favorite receiver, Jordy Nelson, is cut by the team. And then we were on the air for probably a couple hours after those two pieces of news broke. And it was almost like a funeral for the last hour and a half, 2 hours of the show, Lawrence.
What's the reason behind not wanting Jordy Nelson back? Because I know it's a guy that's coming, still fighting back after a terrible knee injury. But his relationship with Rodgers is unique. And those guys are on the same page, and he knows where to be, and Rodgers knows where to put the ball, and the back shoulder throw has kind of been perfected by those two. And to now not have that, it seemed like a strange thing. And this is after you fire Aaron Rodgers' quarterback coach.
Right. And I think that the implications off the field and the dissatisfaction that it may breed with Aaron Rodgers, and they have contract negotiations coming up between the two sides, I think that might be the biggest impact of cutting Jordy Nelson, and by all indications, giving him a low ball offer on his way out the door to try and keep him around. By multiple reports, that's what happened. So Aaron Rodgers can't be happy with not only the way that they ushered his favorite target and best friend on the roster out of town, but the fashion in which they did it. And I think that could breed, I'm not saying Aaron Rodgers won't be a Packer anytime soon, but I think it could breed some bad blood. As far as on the field, Lawrence, Jordy Nelson had lost a step. Now, he's a great route runner. Like you said, he's got the back shoulder passes. He's got the timing and the chemistry down with Aaron Rodgers. But the bottom line was he had lost a step over the last couple of years since tearing his ACL. And they had so much money invested in their wide receiver core between what they just gave Davante Adams after his big season, what they're already paying Randall Cobb, and what they're already paying Jordy Nelson. If they were going to free up some salary cap space and spend some of it on the defensive side of the football, chances were one of those wide receivers was going to be the cap casualty, and they must have just figured Randall Cobb has more in the tank than Jordy Nelson does.
I will say, though, the prospect of Aaron Rodgers plus Jimmy Graham, kind of exciting.
Absolutely.
On what could happen in the red zone.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think that Jordy Nelson was his favorite target in the red zone. So you replace the red zone target. It's the stuff between the 40s now. Can he develop the type of chemistry and rhythm that he had with Jordy Nelson between the 40s that he had with Jordy Nelson getting him down the field? Because we know Jimmy Graham is maybe the best red zone target in the NFC, especially as far as tight ends go. So that I don't think that will be a problem, Aaron Rodgers and Jimmy Graham figuring that out. But like I said, between the 20s, let's see if he can integrate himself into the offense and be as effective a piece as Jordy Nelson was all these years.
Is Aaron Rodgers happy?
That's a tough question, Lawrence. The whole thing with this quarterback's coach and speaking out about it on a radio show, that's very un-Aaron Rodgers-like. And really, you don't see a lot of quarterbacks around the league, period, speaking out, especially franchise quarterbacks and faces of their franchise, speaking out against an organization and one of the personnel or coaching moves that they made. So that definitely did raise some eyebrows. Again, I'm not ready to say Aaron Rodgers won't be a Packer anytime soon. I think he's probably a Packer for life, or at least for the most effective years of his career. If he wants to play beyond that, the Packers will cut you with a quickness if you're beyond your effective years and move on to a new era. Just ask Brett Favre. But I think for the foreseeable future, even if he is a little bit unhappy, it's something that they'll work out behind closed doors, and they'll work out with a lot of dollars and a lot of commas on his check and figure the whole thing out.
As someone who covers the Packers, you look at what the Bears have done by signing Allen Robinson and Taylor Gabriel and Trey Burton. Does it do anything to make you worry that the Bears are moving towards relevancy in the NFC North?
I think Packers fans, if they're looking in their rearview mirror still, because a lot of people see last year and even a couple of years ago when Aaron Rodgers suffered his last injury as blips on the radar of the Vikings winning the division. And if we had Aaron Rodgers, well, we'd win the division. So enjoy it while you got it. I think that's how a lot of Packers fans have looked at it over the years. Some Packers fans are probably thinking now that they're looking up at the Minnesota Vikings, or at the very least, the Minnesota Vikings are very close in the rearview mirror in the division. I think that's their first and foremost concern. I think they recognize what the Bears are doing. They see that it's a team that's improving and could be a threat years from now, but I don't think that they're worried about the Bears in the division right now. From the Bears' perspective, I see what they did, Lawrence, and I think they could be on the fringe of the playoff picture next year from where I sit. I think they're a team that could be in that 8-10 win range with the moves that they made and the changeover in the coaching staff. But I don't think that they'll be a threat in the division anytime soon.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Let's talk basketball.
All right.
What
do we
the
have to?
Hell, man.
I have no idea, Lawrence.
What the hell?
I have no idea.
Man. This was the year that the Bucks were supposed to be the third seed in the Eastern Conference.
I know. And this more than anything in terms of Wisconsin sports hurts me, because as a Chicago transplant, I've sort of adopted the Milwaukee and the Wisconsin teams. I tell everybody out there, they're my second favorite team. If it's not going to be us bringing home the trophy, I'd like it to be you. And that especially goes for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, we allowed you to kind of, because the Bulls are whatever.
You granted me a leave of absence for my Bulls fandom for the time being. And it looked like I was off to greener grass. You know what I mean? To brighter pastures. But it has not necessarily worked out that way. And it all started with a skid that led to the firing of Jason Kidd. And then they got that little boost, that little jolt that you get from firing a head coach and bringing in a new guy. And then that lasted all the way up until the All-Star break. And since the All-Star break, Lawrence, it's just been a downward spiral, a tailspin, and it's gotten to the point now where Bucks fans have all but given up on this team. A couple days ago, my last day before I went on vacation, the son of the owner of the Bucks and their senior vice president, Alex Lazary, was going back and forth with Bucks fans on Twitter.
No,
who have lost faith in this team. Yeah, and it got ugly, man. I wanted to turn the mics off and just somehow broadcast this Twitter fight between Alex Lazary and Bucks fans and just get my popcorn out and taking it all in, because it's devolved into Bucks fans not having faith in their franchise, seeing chaos from the front office on down, and the franchise itself trying to fight off that perception. And they're saying, no, everything's fine. We're just in a down spot. It'll get fixed. Everything's great. We have the new arena coming next year. And a lot of Bucks fans just aren't buying it, man. They're skeptical, and they're seeing new owners, but the same old Bucks.
I will say, though, even in the eighth spot in the East, I think that Milwaukee's in a good place, because I still don't trust the Raptors. And that's, I think the eight is where they should want to be. You move up to seven, you're dealing with Boston. You make it all the way up to, you three games out of the sixth spot, you get Cleveland, you get LeBron.
Right.
You don't want any of that.
No.
But Toronto,
you could knock off Toronto.
You absolutely could.
And I feel like anybody who's in Milwaukee listening to this right now, Lawrence, I put out the tweet joining Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score. Anybody who's listening right now and hears me say that I think the Bucks could knock off the Raptors in a seven-game series are telling me to shut up, because I've been Mr. Optimistic when it comes to the Bucks, even when all my other co-hosts and all the callers, all the listeners are turning on this team. I'm going, guys, this thing could still work. They got a lot of talent on this roster. When they're up, they're really up. And yes, when they're down, they're really down. But if they're hitting one of their high notes come playoff time and they face the Toronto Raptors, I could see them knocking off the Raptors in a seven-game series. I don't think that's an unrealistic thing to say. A lot of people are tired of hearing me say it because they're tired of the optimism, and they want me to keep it 100 with them, Lawrence. But that's me keeping it 100. I think that they could knock off the Raptors in a playoff series.
Why should you lie about the way that you feel about it? And if you think that they could win, you should say it.
And they had the Raptors in the corner last year in a playoff series and let them go. And this year you come in, and now this all hinges on Giannis and that ankle that forced him to leave the game yesterday. And I understand he's been ruled out already for tomorrow night. Obviously, if Giannis ain't right, they have no shot against the Raptors or anybody else. So it all hinges on that. But I think that if the Bucks are riding one of their highs come playoff time, and it's the Raptors who they face in the first round, we could be looking at a playoff series victory. I wouldn't be that surprised at all by that.
This segment being brought to you by Tomorrow Sleep. Get heavenly sleep with a new Tomorrow Hybrid mattress. Use promo code DRIVE1 and save up to $250 when buying mattress, foundation, and sleep protector at tomorrowsleep.com. One more segment with Rami Makhlouf coming up next here on The Score. I only got a few more minutes with my man Rami. Let's talk comedy.
All right, let's do it.
Because not only are you a fantastic talk show host.
Thank you, sir.
Of The Big Show, 105.7 FM in Milwaukee, you are also a stand-up comedian.
Yes, sir.
So in this week off, are you going to gig or what?
I got a few coming up. This Friday, I'm in a roast battle with one of my buddies up in Milwaukee. I love roasts, Lawrence.
I really love
roasts, man. Yes. Oh, because the thing I love about a roast, whether it's a roast battle or it's just your classic roast or one person is sort of the guest of honor and everybody sort of rips on him, it's comedy in its purest form to me. There are no lines. Nobody's going to get offended. Everybody who walks in, performers, audience members, everybody walks in with the understanding that Everything that's said here tonight is said in the interest of just having fun, just getting laughs. It's just in the interest of humor. And you can go anywhere with it. You could be sexist, you could be racist, you could be, and you know, in today's day and age, you gotta watch which lines you're stepping on when you're doing stand-up comedy. You know what I mean? And you can be the guy who shocks everybody and offends everybody. I always look at it as, I want a room full of people laughing. I don't want a room full of people with their jaws on the ground aghast at what I just said. You know what I mean? And in a roast, you can really just let loose. You can get that out of your system. You know what I mean? You can really tap into that mean, funny bone that you have in you and just let it all hang out. So it's called the Insult and Battery Roast Battle. It's happening this Friday night at the Underground Collaborative in Milwaukee. And then I got a show on Sunday, a matinee show. It's the Cold Pizza Show. It's done once a month on a Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. And then next Friday, I got two shows, both up in Milwaukee. One will be at Good Harvest Brewing, and then I'll go right from there to Puddler's Hall. And actually, a couple of Chicago comics are coming up to put on a show up at Puddler's Hall. So they reached out to me, and we're going to try and put on a show for the people, Lawrence.
What's the difference between the buzz of a day behind the microphone of doing your show and a big story breaks versus going out there on stage and getting ready for a set?
It's much more of a, an adrenaline rush when you get off that stage after you had a big set, Lawrence, because, and not that you don't get an adrenaline rush from doing what we do, but
sure,
getting that immediate feedback where you have a room full of people, 100, 150, 200 people, and you know that you just gave them a good time for 10, 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever time you did, and you get off that stage and you see the smiles on their face and they want to give you a high five or a fist bump or whatever the case may be, that is a rush that I don't know that you can necessarily duplicate. The closest thing to me is, you know, growing up playing sports and you hit a home run or whatever the case may be, and you come back to the dugout and that type of rush. But there's nothing quite like the rush of getting off a stage after a strong set and just feeling that adrenaline going through your body. It's a little bit different on radio. You know, you can wrap up a show, and I'm sure you have this feeling. Some days you feel like, this was a great show, I knocked it out the park. Some days you walk out feeling like, maybe I just wasn't on today. And a lot of the time it's right down the middle of the road. You kind of have a feeling for how you did, but when you get off a stage having just done a stand-up comedy set, you know how you did. There's no mistaking it.
What's the worst that you've bombed?
The worst that I've bombed? I've done shows, you know, when you're coming up, you just take stage time wherever you can get it. Give me 5 minutes, give me a stage, and give me a mic, and I'll take it. There was a show I did up in middle upper Wisconsin. And there was a blizzard that night. It took us almost 2 hours to make what should have been a 45-minute, hour-long drive. But we were like, we're booked. We're getting paid to do comedy. We're going to get there. We're going to do it. We got there, and there was like 7 people at this place, Lawrence. And here's the worst part. They weren't even there for us. It was just their friendly neighborhood bar that they were going out to. They didn't know that there was a comedy show coming. They were just there to have a bite to drink or have a bite to eat and a few drinks and just, you know, wait out the blizzard. And here comes the cast of clowns from Milwaukee who want to tell jokes loudly into a microphone and try and get them into it. And they were just not having it, man. They were just not having it.
Dude, this was a pleasure, as per usual.
No, my pleasure, Lawrence. Always, man.
I appreciate you coming through.
I look at coming here the same way as I look at going to a comedy club. All I want is, on my way out the door, is to get an invite to come back another time. That's how I look at it every time I come here and every time I walk into a comedy club. Did I get enough of a hit that I get an invite back? That's how I look at it every
time.
Man,
you got people texting the show.
Really?
Some Nick Davis's dad, apparently.
Okay, yeah, Nick Davis is a fellow comedian of mine up in Milwaukee, and his dad is a Chicago native, so he listens to you all the time.
So people are wanting to see you come back on the show, so
nice.
I guess... No, I mean, you have a standing invite to be on this show.
I appreciate
and
that,
if
Lawrence.
You're willing to come and hang out here...
Anytime, man.
I'm all for it. You're a good man, and
thank
I appreciate
you,
that. And I'm coming up to Milwaukee.
I believe you.
We're gonna
have
a good
to
time.
It. I won't let you forget.
I'm gonna mess with your
my co-hosts.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna mess with them. This segment being brought to you by Firestone Complete Auto Care. Firestone Complete Auto Care, keeping cars running newer longer. Whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
Hey, real quick, Lawrence, before you send me out of here, Loyola right now up on Nevada. I just want to point out, you know, you guys are doing the 5-hour energy anytime bracket challenge here on the Score. And yep. We got to go, you know, we're your sister station, so we're doing it up in Milwaukee too. Your boy is number four in all of number one in all of Milwaukee, number four in the nation in the 5-hour bracket. 5-hour energy.
Do you have Loyola challenge. Winning this game?
I had Loyola getting to the Sweet 16 and then losing. So I got them losing tonight. But I did, and that's not, you know, the real time. I didn't switch it to get Loyola to the Sweet 16. I picked Loyola to the Sweet 16 before this thing even started. Number four in the nation, Lawrence.
All right.
Number four in the nation.
We will see what happens with the Ramblers.
Keep an eye on it.
And once that game goes final, we will do a quasi post game of it.
Okay.
Rami's good people. Check him out.
Thanks, man.
On 105.7 FM in Milwaukee. I'll be back after this. You're listening to The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.